Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm back with Allison with an I.
Hey, y'all.
And Allison with a Y.
Hello.
Hello. We are here today to discuss Kaal, a 2005 Indian film that's spelled K-A-A-L. And this is a Wheel of Death pick, which is our regular random movie pick. We usually take turns choosing movies, but every fourth movie, we let a super high-tech Wheel of Death decide what movie we're going to watch, and Kaal is what it chose for us. So to kick us off today, Allison with a Y, do you want to give us a quick synopsis of Kaal so we know what we're getting into here?
Sure. Kaal, which means the time of doom in Hindi, is a 2005 Indian film about what happens after two tourists are killed by a tiger in an Indian national park. This leads National Geographic correspondent Krish and his wife Rhea to visit the park to investigate. At the same time, a group of four young friends led by the heart Throb, Dev, also venture into the park on a camping trip. Their paths intersect when Dev's driver accidentally runs into Krish's car, so the two groups join forces in their one still-functioning vehicle. The gang of explorers begin to notice a string of disappearances around them, a mechanic repairing Krish's car, a park ranger they encounter, and one of Dev's friends all disappear in what some of the group suspect to be additional tiger attacks. The gang decides to get the fuck out of the park, but on their way, they are cornered by three tigers and a mysterious black-clad man named Kali, who seems to hold some kind of influence over the giant cats. Kali, who says he lives in the jungle, tells them that the recent deaths they've noticed are the work of the ghost of a tour guide who used to lead tourists to their deaths at the hands of wild animals. He agrees to lead the group out of the park to safety.
This is a return to a genre that has kind of a storied history here on Amon, Bollywood horror. One of the very first movies we ever reviewed on the podcast was 1920 London, Fear Strikes Again, which was a Bollywood horror flick that was very memorable for those of us who were there. And those longtime listeners will know all about the character Jay from that movie that we still talk about, even though we reviewed that movie like 8 years ago. Neither of you two have seen that, I'm sure.
No.
Nope. Also a no for me.
it's not an easy one to find. It's one of those like weird things that just like pops up on Netflix, which you know maintains a robust catalog of international films. But I mean, what's y'all's past experience with Bollywood? Allison with an I, I think you said last time that you had never seen a Bollywood film before, right?
I think that is true, and definitely not a Bollywood horror film. If we're calling this that, which I guess we will, yeah. But yeah, no, that's true. I had a roommate for 3 years who is Indian, and she loved all the Bollywood movies. So I would walk by the TV from time to time, and she'd be watching some blockbuster Bollywood movie, and I would stop and peek at it for a minute. But it just never was my kind of thing. Like, I'm not into, like, musicals. I'll see a musical live, like a play, but musical films, I'm not – that's not my jam. So I think I've avoided Bollywood films for that reason. So yeah, this was, I think, my first foray into that.
Yeah, it's a genre that I've always found really intriguing, but I haven't dug super deep on it because I do like musicals. Like I always like them at least in theory, you know, like I like the idea of a story that's told primarily through song. And then when I actually get down to watching most musicals, it can be a different story where I'm like, fuck, why are we doing it this way?
Yeah.
But I've always wanted to get into more Bollywood, not to say that Bollywood movies are necessarily always musicals in the traditional sense, but there's usually a lot of musical numbers. Allison with a Y, what are your feelings about Bollywood? Have you like watched any Bollywood movies before this?
Or? I have. Yeah. I think the one that I remember best was in like the mid-aughts. I watched Bride and Prejudice, which was a Bollywood take on Pride and Prejudice.
Oh.
And it was delightful. Huh. I loved it so much. I still think of it more often than I maybe should for a movie that I saw probably, you know, 20 years ago at this point.
Uh-huh.
And I've like seen other films that have like maybe Bollywood elements, even if they're not out of India, maybe like films out of like England, like Britain, because since they have like a large, fairly large Indian population, that have like certainly been like inspired or like have some elements that are inspired by Bollywood. And I've always really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the music is incredible. I've always really enjoyed Indian music. The traditional garb is so beautiful. And I've always been very, very intrigued and into like the more traditional like dancing style of mm-hmm. Bollywood. I haven't seen a ton of Bollywood. I've always really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny because like I feel like normally you kind of associate the genre with, you know, with romance like Bride and Prejudice that mm-hmm. you mentioned, you know, kind of over the top, almost like soap opera-y kind of plots. And so it's funny when that's grafted onto a supernatural story or like a horror story like this one, which I mean, I would say this isn't as Bollywood-y as I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. Call isn't. But it does start with a fucking dance number.
Sure does.
Yeah, and I learned that the guy in the dance number is just like a really, really famous Bollywood actor. Huh. And he also helped produce the film.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I didn't realize until the end of the movie that the people dancing in the movie were the actors from the movie. And I'm
yeah.
Is this a prerequisite that, like, if you're an Indian actor or actress, you have to also be a crushing, like, Bollywood dancer? Because
probably.
I was impressed.
I was thinking about that, too. I was like, you know, what, you kind of have to be a triple threat or double threat or whatever, you know, like, you not just act, but you also have to be able to kind of nail some, like, pretty complicated and high energy dance moves, I think is such a common thing to the genre. I mean, whatever, we're all novices to this genre, so
yeah.
maybe some folks on Discord or online can correct us and be like, there's not dancing in every Bollywood movie, guys, but... There has been in the handful that I've seen.
Yeah.
But yeah, what? How did y'all like the opening? Like, I mean, it's a music video. Like, nothing else happens before this. There's just a song, which unfortunately is not subtitled. I wish that there were subtitles because I assumed that it was like telling some of the story of the movie. People are definitely in animal print outfits, mm-hmm. so it's alluding to the wildcats that play a big part in the movie. Like, how did y'all react to that?
It was aggressively 2000s.
It was.
Which I found kind of charming.
As honestly. Is, like, much of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, my God. Absolutely.
I took notes, and the first note that I took was so many hot people. <It's> like, where are they finding these like outrageously attractive people that are like just beautiful, can sing, can dance, can like body roll you to the death? It's like so many attractive people. So that was my first impression. Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of like nicely toned abs.
Yes. A lot of them
in that first number.
Yeah, a lot of bikini clad women, a lot of guys. If I remember correctly, with like real deep V's, so you could
or
see
like shirts,
you know,
unbuttoned.
Impressive pecs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you guys had prepared me before we ended our hang the last time we recorded, and you said Bollywood movies just be prepared for like scene breaks and like. Whole full-on music videos. So I saw, you know, this was obviously the intro, and I'm like, oh, here we go. And then I was expecting more of it, but we didn't get any more until the end, which, you know, made sense.
I was also expecting more because my past experience, again, in like, you know, horror-toned films, is that they'll just stop the movie dead for, you know, a music video or something. So I was actually sort of disappointed that that didn't happen in this, because the opening number was like, I mean, spectacular.
Yeah.
It is spectacle for sure. It was
definitely spectacle.
I was dazzled.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I was also a little bummed that there wasn't more. I wanted some little breaks throughout the story for, you know, possibly a Bollywood number with tigers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. That was a huge missed opportunity, actually, like putting a tiger in one of the videos.
Probably I didn't even know that I needed
animal
that.
Animal ethical issues. Yeah. Yeah, seriously. The other thing I really want to talk about is Kali, because I fucking loved Kali, but I almost feel like I need to, like, hold him back a little bit the way the movie does, because he makes a dramatic ass entrance like halfway through this, and I feel like I just need to like edge us all towards actually talking about Kali.
Yeah, there's a lot of other character development before we meet Kali that we should talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have like a large cast of characters in the like little the synopsis that we put together for this. Like, you know, Allison with a Y only mentioned three, I think, of our gang that go into
Krish,
the park.
Dev, and Rhea.
Right. And it's like, there's a big cast of characters. It's almost like that slasher thing where it's like, okay, some of these people are just like idiots who are here for like cannon fodder or tiger fodder or fodder for whatever is taking them out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, my first impression of Krish, can we talk about the scene where he wrestles the anaconda, first of all?
Yes.
That was wild. That's how we were introduced to them, right?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Rhea's dressed constantly like she's going clubbing in the early 2000s.
In 2003.
And she's in full makeup and like crop tops with zippers and wedge platform sandals in the middle of the jungle while Krish is wrestling an anaconda.
In a low-rise mini skirt. So
denim, I think.
Denim, low-rise mini skirt.
Yeah.
Super functional jungle garb.
Yeah.
Right, because this is what she wears for basically the entire – I think she has two outfits in the whole movie. Like, when we first see her, and then after that, it's like they all wear the exact same thing for the entirety of their, like, jungle expedition, which it's like you could have thrown maybe a change of clothes in a backpack at least.
Like, something maybe like, you know, of a jungle color palette. Muted tones. You know, like people go on safari, you have to wear like specific tones, and like they weren't prepared at all for any of this.
Cover your skin like to protect yourself from like the pests and the, you know,
malaria,
toxic plants. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, her and the other woman are like, and I mean, I call her the other woman because a lot of characters in this are fairly disposable. Like, I don't really remember like really notable distinctions between the two female characters who go on this expedition, but they are both in like just clubbing gear. They're bearing a lot of skin for this expedition. But yeah, that anaconda scene though, I mean, okay, because Krish is hot.
Gorgeous.
So hot.
He is toned.
So hot.
He is toned. He's fit, but also they make this odd choice of like, so he's chasing this anaconda in his introductory scene, and they have multiple slow-mo shots of him like running after it. And the shot is weirdly focused not just on his pecs, but also his like stomach area, which is not like, again, he's toned, but also just like the way your body moves when you're doing that. Like, it's very, I just noticed like the flab of his stomach kind of as he ran. I was like, this is kind of an interesting choice for like this sexy shot of him running.
So many interesting choice shots in this movie, I will say right out of the gate. But did anyone else get like Justin Baldoni vibes from Krish?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
I was like, I know Justin Baldoni's a hot topic right now, but like they legitimately remind me of each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I probably would have thought about that even because I watched him on Jane the Virgin. And I probably would have thought that even without the current controversy there.
I only know Justin Baldoni through that controversy, so I've only really become aware of him recently, so I can't attest to that. But I believe you both that he's got Justin Baldoni vibes.
He's on one of my favorite like men's mental health podcasts called Man Enough Podcast.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about
with
that.
With Liz Plank, and she actually stepped down from the podcast after the whole scandal started because she's very, very much, like, very feminist.
Yeah.
And I think that was her way of like, just, I'm not taking a stance on this and I'm disappointed, but I don't have all the details or whatever. But my first impression of Justin Baldoni was very positive because he's like this amazingly, you know, emotionally woke male contributor to this podcast that I think is doing a lot of good in the world of men's mental health. But I digress. Kirsch looked like Justin Baldoni. We can leave it at that. Yeah.
I also appreciated about Kirsch and Rhea, I guess, by extension, because again, like I assumed that she was also like a National Geographic contributor or something at first, but like, no, she's literally just his wife is her role. But I appreciated about the two of them that very early in the film, you get the idea that this is a tiger attack film. There's, you know, a tiger attack basically shown early on in the film. But I also liked that very early on, our protagonists are both like, they want to protect the tigers, you know, and they're already thinking maybe there's something a little odd here. Like, we have to make sure that people don't crucify tigers as a species, for lack of a better word, for these attacks. So even very early in the movie, like, I liked that they were bringing this like animals first, like eco-friendly sort of theme to the movie.
Totally agree. And I had that thought a few times throughout the movie where I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
You fuck with a tiger, it's gonna tiger.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It felt very, it was just very nature friendly and they're not the problem, we are.
Yeah.
And I always appreciate that message.
Right, and that runs through the whole film, too. Yeah. Like, I mean, we'll obviously get into that a lot deeper as we kind of describe what happens in the later going of the movie, but it's a very environmentally friendly film overall.
It was clearly a very intentional theme of the film that they carried throughout it. And if, you know, I'm not going to speak yet on what I think the film had to say fully, but I think that's definitely something that the film had to say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's talk about the other group that ends up intersecting with Kirsch and Rhea, who we've been talking about. Like, these are the dummies of the badge, really. Like, Kirsch and Rhea at least know something about nature, tigers or whatever. Yeah, but these guys are mostly just kind of stupid kids.
Yeah, they're just there to party with each other and have a good time. Like. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas Kirsch and Rhea were there to do some research.
Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, it was Dev, Ashika, and Ashika was Dev's girlfriend, and then Sajid and Vishal.
Yeah.
And Sajid, he was the one who had brought the gun with intentions to go hunting.
Right. You can almost define these characters more by what they, like, bring with them. Like, Sajid, like, brings a gun. Vishal brings a camera. You know, got, like, camera guy and gun guy.
And then girlfriend.
And girlfriend. And bangs guy. Like, Dev's bangs were driving me fucking crazy.
Dude.
Who is calling Dev a heartthrob? Because that is really fucking generous.
That was me. I wrote that. But I feel like the way they shoot him and the way he kind of like, you know, like squints into the camera all the time. I feel like that's what they're going for, is him being a heartthrob. I did not personally find, he did not make my heart throb, I guess is what I would say. But I feel like that's what they were going for.
He was intended to be. I have to look up what actor he reminds me of, because he reminds me of another actor.
I feel like you put him next to Kirsch, and it's like, get that little pipsqueak out of here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And his bangs. Take your bangs and go.
Yeah. He just has big, like, twerp energy. Even though he's always, like, his behavior and, like, the way he carries himself is very, like, trying to be macho, I guess. But he always just, like, seemed like just a twerp.
And he keeps saying he wants to kill people. Like, under his breath. He said it probably like 10 or 11 times, like,
yes,
under his breath toward this one, and then that one was annoying him. And instead of being like, I'm annoyed with you, he's like, I want to kill you. And you're like, slow down, Dev. What are you doing? Okay,
I figured out who Dev reminds me of. Ben McKenzie from the OC. Do you?
I don't know who that is.
Remember? I think you would recognize him.
He also has bangs, right?
Yes. Their hair was very similar in the year of 2005, I feel like.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see it now that I'm looking at pictures of him from the OC. But I mean, yeah, frankly, this whole like crew gives off like the OC vibes. They seem like they have come straight out of like a CW show.
Yeah, Absolutely.
And they're just woefully unprepared for even like a camping trip, let alone what this turns into. Like, first of all, first of all, how many fucking cars break down in this movie? Like, drink every time a car breaks down.
So many.
Yeah.
Granted, they do some dumb shit with the cars. There were a couple scenes where you're just like, why would you hit that huge rock with the car?
Yes.
It's going to fuck up your car, man. You're in the jungle.
Yeah.
Secondly, like, they've already been warned about the weather. Like, it's not a good season to go camping. And and you're just woefully unprepared. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of empathy for them out of the gate. I was just kind of like, whatever happens to you, you fucking deserve it.
Yes. Yeah. The Chris and Rio seem competent. The other four seem like mostly stupid yahoos. I feel like the movie doesn't – I feel like the movie considers these characters to be of equal value or worth, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. It seems like there's such a distinct difference between them, but also the movie doesn't seem to be highlighting that difference. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I had a lot more empathy for Krish than I did Dev.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
He was just
a decent person.
Likable character. But even Krish, even Krish dragging his wife along, it's like, why does she need to come? Like, I get that you guys don't want to be apart, but you're the expert. She's not. This is really dangerous. Right. It's like mudslide season or whatever. It's like the rainy season is approaching. There were so many times in this movie where I was like, why did you make that choice? You know, you as like the touchstone of the expert. Why did you do that?
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting gang for sure. But I want to talk about Kali.
Let's talk about Kali.
Yeah, I think we can talk about Kali.
Kali, the most interesting character in this film by far to me. He shows up leading three tigers. Like, and the tigers just being like, yep, Kali's the boss. I mean, he doesn't have them on a leash. They're all just like hanging out. And the tigers are like, yeah, Kali's cool. He's like full black robes. He looks like fucking Javier Bardem. He's India's answer to Javier Bardem.
So
he's got a real nice smoky eye. He's got a smoky eye happening.
Yeah. He does, yeah.
He worked hard on that charcoal liner. He did a good job.
And he just has presence. And this actor who plays Kali, his name is Ajay Devgan. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, but he's been in a ton of shit and is just a legend. So it's fun that he gets like his big, you know, walk on with these tigers, and he just gave me Jay vibes. If you've seen 1921 and Fear Strikes Again, he's Neo Jay. I've got an early contender for the Spirit of Jay Award this year.
You said that almost immediately after he came on
screen
while we were watching it, for the record.
I was like, oh, I know who the Spirit of Jay is this year.
Explain the Spirit of Jay Award to me, if you will.
Yeah, so, I mean, Jay is an exorcist-type character in the movie 1921 and Fear Strikes Again. And he is like a penniless shepherd who is also a badass exorcist. And similar to Kali, he has an absolutely incredible entrance in the movie that's so over the top and just like, oh, this is a big deal. I need to pay attention to this character. I believe the actor who played him, similar to Kali, is also like a big deal in his own right in Indian cinema. And his behavior in the movie was just so idiosyncratic and so cool and like edgy. He's a mysterious character. You don't know quite what side he's on. Mm-hmm. And he just like fascinated all of us when we watched that movie. So we've continued to talk about him on the show. And every year we hand out the Spirit of Jay Award to the character in a movie that we watched for the podcast that year that most exemplified the Spirit of Jay, which we have historically disagreed upon like what the Spirit of Jay actually means. But usually it's just like a cool fucking character who you want to see more of. And like Kali just, you know, the entire description I just gave almost could also apply to Kali.
I actually thought
movie.
You were talking about Kali.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, we're discussing Jay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's
but Kali is just so cool. He's like brooding. He knows shit. He's always just like, you know, just kind of like shaking his head at these kids. Like, what do you think you're doing?
Perfectly coiffed hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even though he lives in the jungle.
Incredible for a jungle man.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they're largely like not treating him well. Like they're treating him
No.
Right.
They're treating him like a little like minion. Like
Yeah.
Thanks for getting us out of trouble, but like, can you get us some food as well? And he's handling like a champ. I would have been like, are you kidding me? Right mm-hmm. now, I saved your ass from getting eaten.
Yeah, and they're almost like laughing at times at his like knowledge and expertise of the wilderness around them, which is clear, like he knows what he's talking about, but there's still like some degree of like, oh yeah, like whatever, old man.
Yeah, yeah. And he's very fixated, understandably so, with the rules of the park. And he's always going back to the rules of the park and reminding them of the rules that they have broken. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think when you go to a national park, if you go to a natural space, the rules are there for a pretty damn good reason.
Yeah.
Well, and see them literally twice throw away the paper that the rules are written on. Like, fuck these mm-hmm. rules, which again, why are you there? You deserve yep. everything that happens to you. Two times they threw away the rules. So he was trying to help them uphold rules that they didn't even know what the rules were.
So what it actually kind of reminded me of a little bit was a little bit Midsommar-esque, where these people come into this place that they don't belong.
Yeah.
They disrespect it, and then
they pay the price.
Some of them pay the price.
That's a good. Yeah. That's a good point. I love it.
Definitely. I like that you pointed out, though, Allison, with an eye that, like, we literally see the rules. Like, there's a literal sheet of paper, like, typed out in, like, Microsoft Word.
And there were three rules only. Only three.
Yeah. Was there just three? I don't even remember what they were now. Clearly, I would not have fared well in this
Stay in your car.
Yeah, don't walk on the ground.
Don't go without a guide, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go near the well.
That definitely becomes important.
I forget what the second rule was. If it was don't go without a guide, I think it was Allison with the Y.
Because he did bring up the guide thing multiple times. So I think so.
Yeah. Simple, obvious rules that these idiots just could not resist just being outlaws.
Yes.
At every turn.
Absolutely. But yeah, Kali is trying to impress upon them the importance of these rules. And they end up like paying him to take them through the park. He's always like, that's not enough money. And then I think it's Dev who always like happens to have like an extra bill ready to like flash at him.
Oh, I don't think that he says that it's not enough money. I think that he says that money doesn't matter there.
But two different times, like they flash extra money at him. And then he's like, well, okay. I mean, okay. I think
I just read it differently.
Oh, okay. My reading was like, well, maybe not that he wanted money necessarily, but basically just he was saying, that's too dangerous. We shouldn't do that. And then I think it was Dev that kept flashing money at him. And he was like, well, okay.
I think it was Krish, but he was like, I got the impression that it was more like, I'll take your money, but you're not understanding what I'm saying.
Yeah. That's also what I read.
Yeah.
You're not heeding the warnings.
Like, fine. Clearly you're being insistent. So.
Yeah.
I've warned you.
Yeah.
So did any other characters like make an impression on you guys? Because I had a hard time connecting with a lot of these people, probably more because there were so many of them and they did feel like a little bit disposable. But mm-hmm. apart from Krish and Rhea and Kali, and I guess Dev only because he was annoying to me, I didn't feel a lot for anyone else.
No, I think it was about the same. For me, those are the ones who like leave an impression. The other three from Dev's gang are just like Ishika, I think. Is that how
Ishika,
you?
Yeah.
Left no impression whatsoever. Yeah. What about you, Allison? With
I think she was the one who was the only one that didn't really leave an impression. I didn't really have like a sense of her character by the end. But the other two I thought were like notable. Mm. I thought that they had distinct personality traits. Sajid being the one who was like hunting, and he was kind of, you know, he's a little bit of like the bad boy of the group, you know.
Mm-hmm. He has a gun.
And then Vishal was a little bit more of a goof.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit bumbling, a little goofy. I mean, I'm not saying that like these were the world's most incredible, groundbreaking characters, but I remembered them well enough.
Yeah.
And I felt like they were distinct. But Ishika just felt like a bit of a carbon copy of Rhea.
Yeah, eye candy, basically.
Yeah. Effectively.
There to like run around in her wedges and her skirt.
Yeah, she doesn't
whatever.
Seem to really express any wants of her own, whereas I think the other characters do for the most part, even if it's like limited.
Yeah. Yeah, at least Sajid like wants to sneak off and go try and like hunt on his own. Like we know that about him.
Right.
And Vishal is a video diarist, which, I mean, like, that really brings me to just, again, the 2000s-ness of all this. Like, you know, he's got the little, like, handheld video camera with, like, the flip-out screen, flip-out monitor. And the technology in the car when they were first heading to the park was cracking me up.
Oh, my God.
Like, it was, I mean, it was kind of like your standard, like, aughts GPS, but also I feel like they really kind of heightened it and tried to make it like look extra sort of sci-fi, like, oh, they're in a cool car. This is a James Bond car.
There's a whole computer in this car.
Yeah.
And there was like a guy talking to them, like it was like MI5 or something. Do you remember that? Where he was like, you're going too fast. The car is going too fast. And then, do you remember that? Or did I make that up?
I do. No, that was happening.
It was like a narrator.
I do not remember that, but I believe you.
It was very strange.
It was so strange. And just again, like they're just fucking around with these cars.
Yeah, like the original smart car or something. But I don't know, like, you know, Allison with a Y, I think you said early on, like just the aughts. Aughtsness of the music video that opens this. And I mean, like, the whole movie really has, like, aughts music video energy. We've
absolutely.
Got, like, all these weird, like, camera angles and kind of distorted shots of characters. Not just low angles, but the video has also been, like, kind of skewed, stretched so that the perspective is distorted. And it just all has that quality.
Right. Plus, like, with the color of a lot of it, very much the aughts, like, blue grays.
Mm. Like night vision.
Darker. Yeah. A lot of that color palette, which was so, especially so, to me, is so synonymous with, like, 2000s horror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking, like, Hostel, you know, kind of vibes with the color palette that was very, like, oh, yeah. I could watch this not knowing, going into it, knowing what year it was made and probably make a pretty solid guess as to what year it was made.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it feels kind of delightfully dated for like a jungle creature feature kind of thriller. Like, I mean, I thought of Anaconda so many times watching this, and yet also Anaconda didn't feel as dated to me as this does.
Yeah, I don't know that I've seen Anaconda, but I got like Predator vibes. I think I've said that in a couple of our like already podcasts. Ooh. But like that running through the jungle and then that like night vision kind of snaps on and you get the POV from the antagonist.
Yeah.
It all felt very much cut from the same cloth of a lot of these other 90s, 2000s horror movies, like you said, Allison.
Yeah. There are some incredible POV shots from the tiger that just delighted me. It's like, oh, I am watching this from a tiger's point of view right now.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I feel like from a cinematography angle, like they were trying to do something really interesting with it cinematography-wise because like there were certainly, I think, really intentional choices that weren't just like, oh, we're just trying to get this shot. They're like, how do we make this shot interesting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do we make this look interesting? It wasn't just about telling the story. I think it was also very much like a visual thing in their mind too as they were directing it.
Can we talk about how this movie has 86% on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, what? Really? Is that like audience score or critic score?
I don't know, Patrick, and I plan on getting on this episode and asking you how the fuck that works. Because for people like me, I don't totally know how Rotten Tomatoes scores are realized. And you touched on this a couple episodes ago, but for those of us like me who don't know, can you educate us on that?
Yeah, so I mean, Rotten Tomatoes originated as just kind of an aggregator for movie critics, professional critics at newspapers and magazines across the country. And the idea was basically just to determine each of those reviews. Is this a good review or a bad review? And then the percentage score that we're all familiar with is just the percentage of those reviews that Rotten Tomatoes' editors determined to be good. Over time, they realized that they needed to kind of broaden focus, because in like the internet age, obviously there's more than just like fucking like Peter Travers at Rolling Stone reviewing movies, like professional critics. And obviously there's so many other like smaller websites. So they started mixing those into their scores as well. And then over time, they introduced two separate scores. So they would do the score that's the critic score, which is just, you know, quote unquote professional reviewers, which also includes tons of bloggers and like just platforms you've never heard of. And then there's a separate audience score where literally anyone can just vote on if they thought the movie was good or bad. And so at this point, there's like a real, there can be like very strong digressions in the audience score and the critic score. And it's funny to see how some movies will use that to their advantage, because there are some shit ass movies that have gotten a great audience score because they gave their audience what they were looking for. And they're like, our movie has 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's like, okay, Black Adam, or okay, you know, whatever piece of shit The Rock has put out for the week.
Yeah.
I guess that's the first thing that comes to my mind for that.
For the record, Rotten Tomatoes actually says it has a 45% score.
Oh, okay.
Where did I get 86%?
So I think where you got it is if you Google it under reviews, Google reviews says 87% loved the acting.
Oh, interesting. Oh, weird.
Huh. Right, because I think Google has a separate thing where it's like you can thumbs up or thumbs down it.
Yeah, well, you can also leave reviews on Google.
Oh, too. That's right. Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting at this point in time when there's like so many people out there reviewing movies and who want to have an opinion on movies, and these different like tools that have come up to try and like make some sense of that and like distill the consensus on a movie into like a number or a score that you can kind of take into account as far as why whether you should watch it or not. But I feel like we were on the cinematography, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the cinematography is very flashy. It's calling a lot of attention to itself. It's doing the most. And they just love inserting random shots of like wild animals. The mm-hmm. number of times that I saw like a close-up of an owl just like looking around for no real reason or other animals was stunning. And I think it contributes to the movie moving, like, really fucking slowly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just over 2 hours, and it feels a lot longer than that, which is weird because it seems there is a decent amount of action. Like, there's mm-hmm. some surprising things that happen, for sure. It's an adventure movie, but also it was rather slow for me.
Yeah, agreed. Mm-hmm. And then when I was looking it up after, or maybe while we were watching it, I saw that there is a version of this film that is 3.5 hours long.
Insane.
How? Why? What happens?
You couldn't pay me.
To be like additional subplots or something.
What else is there? I will tell you. I had to watch this movie in two sittings.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not going to spoil my review, but I did not want to finish it.
Oh, no.
No. I mean, it just, I can't imagine it being even 1 minute longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there has to, it's almost like you have to have a whole separate story or like an additional group of characters that goes into the jungle or something. Like I really can't imagine what else you could flesh out with this.
Why an additional hour and a half?
Yeah.
No thanks.
Maybe there are musical numbers
maybe
that got cut out for an American release or something.
I'm kind of upset if, I mean.
No, you're not. You didn't want to watch another hour.
I wanted like take out some of the animals and then like put in one of the musical numbers at least.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I would have liked this movie a lot more if there actually was like a like an intermission little musical number, because that was really dazzling. Like that first number, I was like, I am seated. I am watching this.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of fluff in there that didn't need to be there. That just did make it feel really like it was detracting from the whole plot and like just like the pacing. Let's just keep this moving. You've lost the momentum with all these erroneous shots, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I feel like we're kind of getting to the point where we can't talk about too much more without going to the spoiler room to talk about the shocking moments that do actually happen in this in between the fluff. But, I mean, overall, you know, the environmental themes, again, really stood out to me. And were one of the things I enjoyed most about this, because there's like, there was no real need to make this as like sort of aggressively pro-environment and pro-animal as it was, really. Like, I almost felt like I was watching to summon the spirit of Chris, and I'll only say this once because otherwise he'll just appear when I say it, but summoning the spirit of James Cameron's Avatar. Like, there's almost a heavy-handed environmental message here, which I kind of loved, actually.
I liked that aspect of it, too. I'm almost always pro-nature in the stories that are man versus nature. I'm like, you know, as a child, my parents would make, this is horrible to say, my family would make fun of me for, like, being afraid to go in, like, water or go into, like, forests and stuff like that. And I was always like, well, like, there are animals there that can hurt me. There are things there that can hurt me. And they were like, what is the big deal? And I'm like, it's their space. It's their territory. If they came into my home, I would have a right to, like, you know, defend myself. I'm going into their home and their space. They have a right to defend themselves from me. Mm-hmm. And I stand by that.
I mean, you're not wrong. Like, we talked about apex predators when we reviewed all the shark movies.
Yeah.
And our consensus was like, you know, you're in the ocean, man. Like, they're going to shark. Shark's going to shark. Tiger's going to tiger. Yeah. Like,
tiger's going to tiger.
I think that was the one part of this movie that really stuck with me and I appreciated, was that they protected the wildlife. They protected the tigers. The tigers weren't the enemy. Man is the enemy.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just abundantly true across the board for any of these, like, apex predator man versus nature stories is don't mess with the wildlife.
Yeah. So props to it for that.
Yeah.
What did you say after we watched it? It's based and goated.
Did I?
You did.
Like, goated, like, greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was being a zoomer. I said the movie in general was based in goated, or like the environmental
themes. No, yeah. I'm not gonna besmirch your name and say that you claimed that the movie was goated.
Good God.
Oh yeah. The environmental content is pretty based, especially for a movie that is just like, you know, kind of, you know, does have some CW energy to it, that does have, you know, just like summer blockbuster, like adventure, jungle adventure kind of energy to it. Like, it really, there's no need for it to go as hard on pro-environment, anti-people as it did. So props to it for that, I would say.
I would love to see how this movie was received by, like, the demographic of people it was written for, you know? Not that it wasn't written for us, but I feel like there was definitely some stuff that was lost in translation. I mean, literally, but also figuratively, like, culturally, you know? I would love to talk to some people that enjoy and watch a lot of these types of films to see how it stands up against some others, because I just don't have my finger on the pulse of that, right? Like,
yeah. I think when I was taking a look at the Wikipedia, it was not received, like, super well by Indian critics. Yeah, they were kind of disappointed in it. And I've read some Indian film reviews before, and I want to say their critics are almost, like, snootier than American film critics. It's always kind of fun, because the few reviews I've read from Indian film critics seem like they expect everything to be, like, a true masterpiece. There's very little of kind of taking something just for what it was actually intended to be. So I guess I'm saying that just to say, like, take that with a grain of salt, but it sounded like it wasn't the best received by critics. I think it did okay, box office wise though.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. I think there's a sequel to this.
There is. Yes. Yeah. Oh,
so, God. I mean, like, before we review it, we talked about kind of experience with Bollywood. Like, do you want to see Call 2 after this? Or at the very least, do you want to see more Bollywood or more Bollywood horror perhaps? I'll go first. I always want more Bollywood horror. I love when it comes up on this podcast. Even if the movies aren't always great, it's such a fun departure from anything I could expect of an American horror movie, and really anything I could expect of horror from just about any other, like, country or culture.
Allison with an I here. I think this was not my best introduction to Bollywood films in general. I'm sure that there are a lot more plot-driven. You know, the acting was good. Like I said, that opening scene was dazzling. The plot just fell really flat for me. It just was overdone. There was too much dead air for me. maybe I'd like to see something more modern. So I haven't given up on the genre altogether. And I do, you know, there's so many just crap horror movies, so many crap, you know, American horror movies that are made.
Yeah.
That this felt like, at least we have the, I have the novelty of like a crappy horror movie, but from a different culture, you know?
Yeah.
So there was that had it going for it, but.
Okay. So that's a view it from Allison with an I.
I'm really trying here, guys.
I think for me, yeah, I mean, I would love to see more Bollywood horror, but I need more musical numbers.
Okay. Mm.
I need more musical numbers. I want a Bollywood horror film with lots of musical numbers. Like, so I was like a little disappointed that it didn't deliver on that. And I need to see this now. I need to find it.
Find, oh, the long version.
No. I need to find like a Bollywood horror film with lots of musical numbers.
Oh, well, we got to watch 1920 London Fear Strikes again, then. We got to track it down. Or Boothnoth. Boothnoth was a wonderful film.
Yeah, but that wasn't really like horror.
Boothnoth, no, is basically a family film.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horror the way that like Casper is horror.
Well, if Allison with a Y watches 1921, I'm going to have to watch it so I know how to give this award away when it comes time.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I think in this new era, we need to like make a decision about if we're carrying on the spirit of Jay.
Or we turn it into the spirit of Kali.
The spirit of Kali. It could be.
Potato, except potato.
except Kali doesn't have a cool like musical cue that plays 17 times every time he shows up like Jay.
Damn.
I don't know. We'll have to workshop this.
Yeah, totally.
But in the meantime, it's time to review it. It's time to say if we would view, cue, or screw this movie. Allison, with an eye, I want to go to you first because I feel like you mostly just gave your review without giving it its specific rating. So view, cue, or screw.
I really tried. I tried to, in the words of Allison with a Y, meet this movie where it was at. And there were just so many frustrating parts for me and unrealistic, and I just couldn't stretch my brain that far. So unfortunately for me, it's going to have to be a screw it. Patrick. View, cue, screw.
I will give this a cue. I enjoyed, there was a lot of stuff I did enjoy about it. Obviously, Kali being first and foremost. But yeah, it's too long. It's too baggy. It feels so dated and not in a good way. Like, The Matrix is dated and of its time in an amazing way. Like, it still goes so hard, and this is like, yeah, that looks like a mid-aughts music video. A lot of dispensable characters, a lot of forgettable characters. I'm glad I saw it. You know, again, it's kind of this weird artifact where how many other horror movies of American or any other culture do you kick off with a fucking music video? So that's cool. It has a unique energy in that sense. But I can't give this a particularly strong recommendation as anything other than a curiosity to maybe throw on if you want to see something kind of like wild while you and your friends mostly talk through it on like a Saturday night. Allison with a Y, view it, cue it, or screw it.
Oh, I really debated over this because it's like right on the tipping point.
Cuspers.
Of a cue it and a screw it for me. So I have to give it a high screw it.
Okay, yeah.
It's a screw it, but it's like a... It's not that bad. Like, it's like, I you know, I'm not like punting it into hell, you know.
It's not a screw it with prejudice.
It's not a screw it with prejudice.
I like that.
Because it just, I agree that it was just too long. If there was a cut of this that cut out a lot of that stuff, I would probably give it a cue it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there were interesting moments, there were fun moments, there were elements that I did enjoy, but I'm not going to recommend that anybody sit down and watch it with the version that we watched.
That's like, true. There's probably like a 90-minute or 100-minute version of this kind of hidden inside some of the unnecessary bullshit that just like clips right along,
yeah.
Still gets like the environmental message in. And has like the fun, exciting stuff that you go to a movie like this to see.
Yeah.
I feel I would watch that. I would watch that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much of these people just squabbling about kind of the same things over and over again. It's like, okay, yeah, we get it.
Yep, yeah, agreed. I like your not screw it with prejudice. I feel the same way. Just
yeah.
It wasn't for me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, speaking of people squabbling about the same dumb bullshit, that's what we're about to go do in the spoiler room. But before we head there, I will encourage you, as always, to visit our website, broken website, very broken website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. But you know what's not broken? The link that says merch store. You can click on that and you can get a shirt or coffee cup or I think sticker hoodie with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art designed by myself on it. And we make a whole like $2.50 off of that. And we'd love to spend that on, I don't even know what you can get for $2.50 anymore. Tofu.
Tofu. Allison, actually, it was $1.50 at the store.
Yeah, you could get like a block and a half of tofu for that. So go to the website, get us some tofu, and also go follow us on social media. There are more ways to do that than ever before, and Allison with a Y would love to tell you all about them.
Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram, Blue Sky, Facebook, Amoncast, EHMONCAST, Amoncast. And then you can also find us on TikTok at Amon Podcast, EHMONPODCAST, or just look up Every Horror Movie on Netflix because you'll probably find it through that as well. Please send us some suggestions for content that you would love to see in video form from your favorite horror podcast hosts. And then also tell us what you want us to do as well. That was a joke.
Oh,
that we're not their favorite horror podcast hosts.
I get it. Yeah. They're going to be like,
please keep that in.
Should I add like a wah, wah,
wah. Absolutely. The two of you just stare at me dead eye.
I was like, wait, isn't that what you just said? We're both so egotistical that we're like, yeah, we're their favorite horror. You just said that. What the fuck are you talking about? But yes, also Discord. We would also love to connect with you on there. We've got a lovely community of folks from all over the world who love talking Amon and love talking horror in general. We've got links to the Discord and all the socials in the show notes. And lastly, please follow us and review us on your podcast provider of choice. We love seeing those reviews. We like to see the feedback. As long as it's positive, you know, don't go saying any bullshit. Like, why even waste your time? We want good reviews because that helps people find the show. Thanks. All right, we're going to go down to the spoiler. Oh, we're going to the spoiler well today.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, got to be careful with that, though.
Yep.
And we're going to reveal all the spoilers about Call. Hop on in your super technologically advanced car, set the GPS for the spoiler well, and we'll see you there. Okay, we are back. We have gotten deep into the heart of the jungle. There's this really weird well that our guide has warned us not to mess with, but the spoilers are down there, so we're going down the well. We're in the spoiler well for Call. So, what are the spoilers for Call? Basically, people keep dying. Left and right.
People be dying,
and, Kali is not what he seems to be.
No, he's not. Because he told them this this story early on about this crazy tour guide who was leading tourists into the park to get eaten by animals. Turns out he was the tour guide.
Yeah, so he's a ghost, which you find out after plenty of people have already died. And they go back to review some footage that Vishal took, and they see only tigers and no man, no Kali in the footage. And then that's when their brains click together, and they're like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. He's the guy.
He's been a ghost this whole time.
And he's basically been like leading irresponsible tourists to what he considers an appropriate fate for them. And probably from what we were discussing earlier, what we would all consider an appropriate fate. No.
I don't think everybody deserved their fate.
Yeah. Who should have survived?
Rhea.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I mean,
that's unfair. That was bullshit.
That's true.
It's kind of like how some of the deaths, once again, going back, comparing to Midsommar, some of the deaths in Midsommar felt unearned.
Yeah.
Felt like it was just for a body count versus Versus actually having a good excuse. And I don't think she deserved that.
Well, and I think the two scientists that were initially killed by these tigers didn't deserve that, right? Like, we later find that he was responsible for their death, which is what prompted this whole investigation by, you know, the National Geographic. I don't think they deserved it.
Right, right.
Yeah, and again, like, scientists, I think one of them is wearing a crop top, too, yeah. The opening scene. Like, would these women scientists just be out there wearing crop tops in the jungle in this movie? But yeah, I mean, Kali is a very corporeal ghost, though, because he certainly has control over physical matter. And it turns out that a bunch of these deaths that we have thought were tiger-related were actually, like, Kali just fucking people up. Because he basically, I mean, he can do pretty much anything a person can do.
Mm-hmm. I think that we get a couple of moments where we understand that the tigers, from an early point in the movie, the tigers aren't responsible, but then who is? So there are some, like, red herrings, right, that point to, mm-hmm. okay, this is human. And a couple of the group, Dev's group, at one point turns on each other and is like, are you accusing me of being the killer because I have the gun? And then Dev, with his, like, constantly being like, I want to kill you, to people that just minorly annoy him. Like, I think we're meant to be led into a couple different directions of, okay, it's like a whodunit, you know?
Yes.
Well, we've even also got the sort of like the park warden, I want to say. I don't know if that was his official title, but he's like the big boss of the park. India's answer to Tim Roth, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Had sinister vibes.
Sinister. Yeah.
And he's referenced earlier in the story before he shows up in the movie. Yeah, I really thought he would have something to do with this in the end. But actually, no, he shows up for one scene and then I don't know that he's ever referred to again.
He shows up at the end to bring the survivors out.
Oh, okay, that's right.
And to be like, you didn't follow the rules. And they're like, what rules?
It turns out he wasn't a bad guy after all that we know of.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some of the deaths that were impactful or ridiculous or badass or all of the above.
There's one that's
let's talk about it
to me. Vishal.
Fucking Vishal.
Gets decapitated by a fucking car door in an insane scene. Like, they're trying to cross this rickety bridge over a river in their car. And there's so many. It's very Final Destination-like in how many, like, red herrings there are as far as how someone might die. Like, there's gasoline in the water and, like, fire lands in the water.
And a crocodile.
There's crocodiles. Like, you just think that Vishal or anyone else, really, like, practically the whole gang could die in any number of ways. And in the end, the car explodes and the entire car door just blasts off and just slices his head clean off. It's insane.
It was total Final Destination. It was like, okay, how is this guy going to die? And you're just waiting. Like, he didn't die in the car explosion. He didn't die from the aforementioned crocodiles while he's in the
right.
water. He died from this, like, three places removed way of dying that was absurd. But, man, like, he just wasn't fucking listening. And it was another situation of why are you doing that with the car?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, even when he was stuck on the bridge, he was just idling and the wheels were spinning. And you're like, take your foot off the gas. What are you doing?
Yeah. Oh, and speaking of Final Destination, Allison with a Y pointed this out. There's also a water bottle under the brake pedal moment.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Can we talk about
earlier
that?
Earlier in the movie,
Which does not result in a death, I think, but is a notable bit.
Yeah.
It resulted in a crash. Okay, so the water bottle under the gas pedal is, since that movie, one of my more, I think, not even irrational fears. That's a fucking rational fear.
Same.
That is a rational fear.
Same. I have a giant Nalgene that doesn't fit into any of my cup holders, and it regularly, because I just set it in the console between the two front seats of my car, and it regularly rolls off, by my feet, and I always have that panic moment of, like, I have to get this thing off the fucking floor right now or I'm going to die.
Totally. You know? When that water bottle, when it was made clear that water bottle was going to fuck some shit up, my whole body was clenched. I was like, don't do this to me again. I can't have this fear reaffirmed.
What other deaths stood out to you guys?
I mean, the whole fucking stupid well death.
That was stupid.
This basically just this haunted well pulls Rhea in and that's how she dies.
Well, she's super thirsty.
Yeah, she's been really thirsty. She was thirsty in an earlier scene.
Mm-hmm. That scene was obnoxious. That where she veers off course to find something to. She didn't even drink the water. She splashed her face with the water. Because I'm thinking, like, you don't want to drink from that still water.
horrifying.
There's a body in the water that she hallucinated at some point, and nobody else can see it, so she looks crazy. But it's this whole damsel in distress thing where I'm like, you're supposed to be one of the professionals. Everything you just did was asking for trouble. It's like you broke all the horror movie rules.
Yeah.
Well, and the way she actually dies was confusing at best to me, because her like ankle gets caught, I think, in the rope for the well, and then she ends up, it's like a hanging death, except she's hung by her foot, which seems like it shouldn't necessarily kill you.
Well, she drowned.
Oh, she does. Oh, okay. She's upside down. I thought she was just hanging above the water for some reason.
Because there's a line right after they find her dead that is like definitely lost in translation, but is supposed to have meant like the very thing she needed the most was the thing that killed her. And it was like the water.
Yes.
What?
Yeah, that was on the stupid side of things. I mean, like the car door decapitation is stupid, but it's
entertaining stupid.
Yeah, it's entertaining and awesome. And the well death was just like, huh?
But of course it was like a Game of Thrones death where like Krish says to her, he had this moment of realization when she was by the pond that he wouldn't know what to do with her if she were to get hurt. He couldn't live without her. And so he's gonna stop chasing crocodiles and tigers, and he's just gonna focus on her. And it was like this moment where you're just like, yeah, man, like put your woman first. And then you're like, oh shit. This is some, they're saying too much. They're making plans for the future. That's some Game of Thrones shit. Like somebody's going to die.
Yeah.
And I think that was the point of her death, right? Was to leave him just like, he lost everything on this quest.
He has a
knowledge.
Great acting moment at the end of this where he's like typing up his final report and like just tears streaming down his face as he writes his final report. It was just, I loved the melodrama of it. It was incredible. I don't know if there's any other like really notable deaths though, or at least none that are like popping into my head.
I mean, Sajid, his death was gruesome.
What happened to him?
He gets beheaded somehow.
Oh, yeah. There is a lot of beheading in this.
Yeah, there was a lot of beheading. And he, like, we don't see it, but we do see it when they discover his body and it's, like, sitting upright. And it looks like he just has his head bowed down. But there's no head.
One of the first times that they were, like, out loud, I don't think a tiger would do this.
Right.
Yes.
It would be a very, very talented tiger.
Yeah.
If it did.
Just take off the head.
But I don't know. I do love the, you know, circling back around to kind of filling out what we were talking about with the environmental themes. I love how this is set up to just be a killer tiger movie. Like, you think that for a decent enough period of time. And, like, they could have made that movie, like, easy. You know, it could have been Anaconda, except with a tiger. But I like that they chose a different route. And Kali's motivations are not, I mean, I guess they're pure in that he wants to protect the jungle. But, I mean, he's obviously, he goes a bit too far on that crusade, as you said, Allison, with a Y. But I still love that it's just, like, this sort of eco-avenger spirit in the jungle that's behind all this. That's awesome.
Yeah.
What was the movie that was based on a true story about the killer tigers in Africa? Ghost in the Darkness, was it?
Ghost in the Darkness, yeah.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Val Kilmer was in it.
Not a documentary, but it was based on a true story. But when I first started this movie, I was like, this is giving Ghost in the Darkness vibes, which if it had gone in that direction, which is still man versus nature, but the tigers that were featured in Ghost in the Darkness were like hunting the humans.
I think it was lions in Ghost in the Darkness.
It was lions. You're right.
But that was, based on a true story or inspired by true story.
Yeah, I thought we were getting that vibe from this, and then it went in a totally different direction.
Okay.
It got supernatural.
I thought so. Ghost in the Darkness was Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas.
Oh.
It was actually really
good. Michael Douglas, I'm interested.
It was a really good movie.
Oh, yeah. Shit. All right. Maybe I'll watch that and report back. We can talk about it a little more on our next horror catch-up and muster.
Oh, yeah, I'd rewatch that.
Yeah. Oh, actually, so this is not a death, actually, but you sure think it is for a while. So this is like in the climactic events of the movie, once the survivors of our group have kind of actually figured out what's going on with Kali, they start, you know, getting the fuck out, running out of the jungle. And they, if I remember correctly, are sheltering in some kind of like small house or shack,
yeah,
like a cabin basically in the jungle. And you see electrical transformers start to blow and like fall over near this cabin. And it's like, oh, Kali is now exerting some kind of like really supernatural control over these electrical poles and transformers. And the house, like one of these poles falls on the cabin and it like explodes in a fireball. And I like screamed. I was like, yes, this is awesome. And then they like run away from it 10 full seconds later. They play that out so long, or at least it felt that way in my mind.
They do, because I'm pretty sure when the cabin blew up, I was like, oh, thank God it's over.
And they're all dead.
And then it wasn't.
It was like the fourth cabin. I'm like, which cabin are we in now?
Right.
And there's no logical reason that they should have escaped that cabin or that fire. And there's no explanation given for how they get out. We don't know, but they made it out. And the only one who I feel like deserved to get out is Krish, who then, you know, files his report for National Geographic. And everyone in the, you know, the outside world, in the press, is now interpreting all these deaths as tiger-related.
Right.
And Krish decides not to reveal what actually happened, mostly because nobody would believe it.
Right.
But only he knows the secret of Kali.
Which, what was the point of all this then? What was the point? You lost your woman, a bunch of people died, a bunch of cars got fucked up.
I mean, you're going to look pretty crazy if you just go to the press and are like, a ghost killed my wife.
It would be like a big, bold note, almost on like a Mike Flanagan kind of level, for him to like come out with the truth of what happened at the end of this. And it'd probably better movie if he does just share his crazy story with the world. But then also, I don't know, then you discourage people who shouldn't be going into the park.
That's
which is
true.
Good. But then Kali doesn't have any more people to fuck up.
But then we're still blaming it on the tiger, which is what we tried to avoid from the beginning.
Right. True. I don't know. But at least the tigers are going to have Kali looking out for him. We have a happy ending in that sense.
That's true.
The tigers have a happy ending.
And we end with like a new group going into the jungle, I think, right?
Yep. And Kali. A guy wearing a Vermont sweatshirt, of all things.
That was so random.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Does this sweatshirt say Vermont?
And then, one of the dudes gets immediately smoked by a truck.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how it ends.
Also very Final Destination.
That was shocking and I loved it. I can't believe I had forgotten that until you mentioned that. Oh, that was great. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that literally the ending?
Yeah.
Smoked by a truck and then cue another like sick ass pop song that I'm sure was probably written for the movie.
Yeah.
Credits.
Another highlight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the end song, that had four of the main cast members in it.
Oh, right, because there's accompanying video. Yeah, there's dance, you know, in a little, like, side.
Yeah, the two couples
picture
were in
picture with the credits. Yeah, that's right.
Who I think danced and sang better than they acted. So, like, I'm glad they've got that going for them.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. Well, that's Call.
That's Call.
Any other thoughts about the time of doom? My only other thought is I think I'm upgrading to a view it.
Oh, God.
Just kidding. But also, like, as I had a great time talking about this. I had a great time, like, remembering this movie. Certainly better time than I did watching it. Which I didn't have a bad time watching it. That's why I gave it a cue. But it's, I don't know. I'm glad I saw it. It's a classic Amon thing. Like, I'm glad I never would have fucking watched this weird-ass movie if not for this podcast and our Wheel of Death.
Well, Allison with a Y and I are still getting the hang of what classic Amon means because, like you said a couple times, we picked some bangers for our first movies and it is good. It was humbling that we saw a movie that was much more representative of the collective as a whole of Netflix horror movies on Netflix, rather. So,
Yeah, I mean, it's there's so much just junk out there, but the other way in which it's classic Amon for me is just there's so many international horror films, and I'm sure international films of every genre on Netflix that I would never choose to watch, probably because I look at the title Call and go, I don't know what that means, and I'm lazy, so I don't take the second and a half that it would take to find out what the movie's actually about, and I, you know, go about my merry way. And they're, you know, just in however many years of doing this, I've seen so many like movies from countries I frankly didn't even know like had film industries that were like making their own decently budgeted movies. So I don't know. It's often like an interesting cultural experience in that way too. But it's time to figure out what Amon classic we're watching next episode. And it is Allison with an I's turn to tell us what that's going to be. So what are we watching?
My choice for us for next week's podcast is The Watchers, a 2024 film. And the Netflix blurb is as follows. In this folkloric horror, Mina, played by Dakota Fanning, takes shelter with strangers after getting lost in an eerie forest where unseen terrors lurk outside.
Ooh. And this is directed by M. Night Shyamalan's daughter, I believe.
It is. It is her, yeah, ooh, directorial debut.
Interesting. All right. Well, we will see you in 1 week to watch, review, and discuss The Watchers. And until then, follow us on your social media. We're Amoncast, EHMONcast on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, and we are Amon Podcast on TikTok. Check us out on Discord. Join the conversation there. We've got the link in the show notes.
Oh, you can find us on YouTube now, too.
Oh, that's right. We keep forgetting to talk about the YouTube. You can
stream the podcast on YouTube.
We got our first comment on YouTube today.
Oh, no.
They said they commented on our episode about Population 436, which is like years ago. Random ass movie. Like, I've never heard anyone else talk about this movie, but someone commented and said, "This is flipping clickbait." And I'm like, okay. Weird flex that we watched this movie no one else has ever heard of for clickbait, but sure.
It's a long con.
Go off. Yeah, it is really.
It's like, a really long con.
It really is.
So that years later, you could finally upload it to YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, go check out our clickbait on YouTube. We're Amoncast over on that motherfucker as well. All right, we will see you in a week for The Watchers for every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick.
I'm Allison with a Y.
And Allison with an I.
See you next time.